There will be no personal nor direct attacks on anyone. And I would ask that you please try to keep down the loud cheering and the clapping. There will be no booing and no unruly behavior. With that,
this is painful, and it will be for a long time.
Donald Trump, baby! That's right, this man knows what's up!
This is Midday Mobile with Sean Sullivan on FM Talk 106.5.
Well, Sean's a tough guy. I mean, I think everybody knows that. You know, Sean, he took some licks. He hangs in there.
Yeah, what's wrong with the deal we got? I mean, the deal we got drank pretty good, don't it?
Did you hear what I said?
So this is a brave council. I had no doubt about them.
That doesn't suck.
If you don't like it, too bad.
Last question. Were you high on drugs?
Last question. Kiss my...
All right, 107 FM Talk 106.5 and Midday Mobile on this Thursday. Glad to have you along. Live local talk over this hour. Of course, you're a big part of the show at 343-0106, 343-0106. Just to follow up with the story from earlier, a tropical depression forming out in the central Atlantic. Just when? Now, remember this morning when I said the people at Colorado State University backed off their hurricane forecast? And at that point, they're tempting fate. Right, that's how it works. You're tempting, and then okay, all right, folks in Colorado. Why is it once again that the folks in Fort Collins, Colorado, get any kind of say in hurricanes? They're well in, you know, protected, well inland there. But they said, oh yeah, we're backing off the hurricane predictions. The Atlantic is a lot cooler than we thought it was going to be, so it's not going to be as active of a season. And then today, tropical depression number two is now possibly going to become tropical, could become tropical storm Beryl. And that's like, not like Beryl, like a whiskey barrel or monkeys in a barrel, but Beryl like Cheryl with a B. So we'll wait for Dr. Bill's update on that. It's way out in the Atlantic. It's not like it's breathing down our neck or anything. It's just, I'd like to point out that the smarty pants out of Colorado State started with their, oh, it's not going to be as busy a hurricane season. And see what happens, Colorado State? That's what happens. All right. Let's say hello to our buddy Brendan Kirby with LifeSet.com, YellowhammerNews.com, and also the author of Wicked Mobile. Hey, man.
Happy birthday, Sean.
Oh, yeah, and thank you. We were talking about that and I did figure out, you and I are very close to the same age, but I did figure out, as of our discussion just a couple minutes ago, you are almost a year older than me, so you're the old man, and I'm the young guy, and I like that. I feel better about that.
Well, I will take it as a compliment to be your elder.
That's right. You're the elder, so you got to act like it. Somebody has to around here. Speaking of elders and wisdom and all those kind of things, the president has said, President Trump saying he is wrapping up his investigation, his due diligence into a Supreme Court nominee. And Dalton poked his head in here earlier, said we may hear something as early as today on this.
Yeah, the president set Monday to announce this, which I think is probably still going to be the case. Of course, presidential schedules sometimes go out the window with Trump, but he does sort of like the buildup and the drama. I think maybe more likely he will make his decision today, but we won't hear about it until Monday. And of course, I could be wrong, but I think that is the way Trump's going to do it, and I think that he's going to not let it leak out and not tell anyone until the very last moment. If you remember when he picked Neil Gorsuch last year, he kept everyone guessing, and a bunch of reporters noticed that Judge Tom Hardiman from Pennsylvania was traveling east, and there was a lot of speculation that he was on his way to Washington and he was going to be the guy. He turned out to be the runner-up.
Okay, and let's talk about this time and the names in the mix. I know that the list is a couple dozen, and that, you know, that makes sense on a cover all your fronts politically or whatever, or somebody drops out or somebody doesn't accept it. But can you give us, like, the Brendan Kirby take on the ones we should probably be thinking of? Which ones are the leaders here?
Yeah, you know, there was some talk of some wild card names like Senator Mike Lee, perhaps, or his brother, you know, perhaps, and various other appellate court judges. I think it's probably down to three. Brett Kavanaugh, who is an appellate judge, and Susan Amy Coney Barrett, who just took the federal appeals bench last year and was a Notre Dame law professor, and Raymond Kethledge. I think those are the three top front runners. Kavanaugh and Kethledge have something in common in that they both clerked for Anthony Kennedy, who is the justice that they would be replacing. So there's some thinking that perhaps Trump will go with one of those two as sort of an ode to Kennedy. And then the other choice, Amy Coney Barrett, would be an interesting choice. She has a non-Ivy pedigree, and this would be the first non-Ivy justice in a while. All the other justices graduated from Ivy schools. In fact, all of them graduated from either Harvard or Yale, except for Ruth Bader Ginsburg, who graduated from Cornell after she had attended Harvard Law and then transferred. So it's a very narrow, non-diverse educational setup, and Amy Barrett would be an interesting choice because she would be outside that. She'd be a woman, obviously, and she would have, she's a devout Catholic with a lot of kids who came under a lot of criticism during her confirmation hearing last year to the appellate bench because of her Catholic views and whether that would affect her judgments. And if you'll recall, Senator Dianne Feinstein famously told her during the hearing that the dogma lives loudly within you, and that got some attention last year.
This would be interesting too, as possibly emblematic. You got to have the right person for the job, but somebody who didn't come from the Ivy League, maybe a bit of an homage to you know, the people that showed up in great numbers to put President Trump in office.
Well, yeah, you know, I mean, we talk a lot about diversity in this country, and usually it has to do with characteristics, you know, that are really superficial, the color of your skin, you know, the your religion, you know, your gender, your ethnicity. That's what people usually mean when they talk about diversity. But I would argue more important than diversity is your background. You know, if you have 9 lawyers who went to the same Ivy League schools, you know, to me it doesn't really matter so much what the color of their skin is or what chromosome they have. You know, they have the same background. So I think it would be worthwhile to have some voices on the court that didn't go to the Ivy League schools and maybe had a different background. But, you know, I think judicial temperament and excellence and intelligence and all that, you know, should rule the day. But if you are looking to diversify the court, that's one way to do it.
You know, if Gorsuch was a big deal, and I think there were a lot of people who showed up and voted for Trump while holding their nose because of the idea of the Supreme Court, this has to, you know, Gorsuch, people can argue about his votes, but Gorsuch maybe somewhat confirmed their vote, but a real conservative on the court here would really solidify and maybe make those people, I don't know, just kind of throwing the spaghetti against the wall, make them feel better about 2020 and another vote for Trump.
Yeah, well, clearly to conservative voters who care about the court, that was the number one reason why they decided to support him. And if you recall, Trump came out with that list of 20 potential court nominees. Judge Bill Pryor from Alabama was on that list. I wrote a story for Yellowhammer last week about why he has kind of fallen to the wayside. You know, that was an unprecedented move to say, this is a list I will pick from this list before he even took office. And that was to be transparent with evangelical conservatives and other constitutional conservatives that, look, I'm one of you. This isn't just talk. This is who I'm going to pick. And that reassured a lot of voters. And yeah, absolutely. The prospect of putting another solid conservative on the court is exciting to them. It probably wouldn't change the dynamics of the court as much as some people are thinking. You know, for all his, you know, swing vote reputation, Justice Kennedy was a conservative justice mostly. There were a few issues where he sided with the liberals and diverted on. So if it was a case that involved gay rights, for instance, you know, capital punishment was another issue that he was prone to go the other way. But just to put it in perspective, in the term that just ended, Justice Kennedy was involved in 14 decisions that were 5-4. And in none of those cases did he line up with the 4 liberals to give the liberals a win. So actually, Gorsuch did that once, and Chief Justice Roberts did that twice. So they were more swingy from that measure than Justice Kennedy was in this last term. term. So, you know, it's people are talking about this like it's Armageddon. And what it would do probably is just solidify the right wing flank and make it a little stronger. But I don't think we would see that much difference.
You know, this would be interesting. I'll tell you what, we'll bat this around for a second before the break and come back and maybe talk more about this. But as you mentioned, Amy Coney Barrett here in the Supreme Court nominee, and you said, you know, Feinstein and others will question because of her Catholic faith, you know, putting her there and, you know, her decisions on Roe versus Wade or, you know, if something like that would come up. Have you ever noticed that while, and I don't know that I'm siding one way or another on here, I just think it's an interesting point of discussion. While liberals will really, really worry about a Catholic being on the court, Scalia and others, because of abortion, they never seem to worry about Catholics being in that position when it comes to, and you mentioned it a second ago with Kennedy, capital punishment. Because if they're going to say, you know, Feinstein's worried about the dogma and the dogma changing things, well, that same dogma would be against capital punishment. And you never hear liberals say, well, maybe it's good to get them there because their dogma would push them to oppose anything that would green light capital punishment.
Well, liberals care a whole lot more about abortion than they care about capital punishment. And I think that's true from the other side, too. You know, we tend to treat these Supreme Court vacancies like abortion is the only issue, which is rather silly since they don't deal with abortion all that much. But it is kind of interesting to see Democratic senators at that hearing last year directly confront her on her faith. And I'm just wondering, can you imagine what the reaction would be if a liberal Democratic president had nominated a liberal Muslim judge to be on the Supreme Court and some Republican senators were asking him about his views on Sharia law? I mean, I think that it would be treated as a national emergency that would go on for weeks on cable television. And it seems like it's okay to do that with Catholics, but probably, you know, almost no other faith would that be tolerated. So it's just kind of an interesting observation on my part.
There you go. Coming right back. You imagine that discussion came up with Kirby and Sullivan on there at the same time. All right. Coming right back, Brendan Kirby from LifeSet and Yellowhammer News. Going to talk more about what's going on the border and what we're facing here in the dying throes of summer here for the U.S. Congress. We'll get into that a lot more when we return.
This is Midday Mobile with Sean Sullivan on FM Talk 106.5.
All right, 123 FM Talk 106.5, Midday Mobile on this Thursday. Getting ready for the weekend. Make a little pit stop into Cottage Hill Package. Get a new craft beer daily for you to try there. So don't forget the stop in to Cottage Hill Package for your summertime beverage collection, right? Get ready for the weekend. It's like a museum of craft beer out there. Tell Andrew, Michael, the whole gang, the Manis family, that I said hello when you stopped by Cottage Hill Package. And speaking of the Manis family, heads up, this is coming up in the next couple of weeks, opening up Havana Ray's Cigar Shop and Lounge at the corner of Airport and Morgan. Havana Ray's Cigar Shop and Lounge, named for their father, Ray, who I love, and I like Ray. I love his cooking. How about that? He is the patriarch of the Banas family, and coming to Midtown, downtown area, Airport and Morgan, Havana Ray Cigar Shop and Lounge with premium spirits, wine, beer, and, of course, great cigars. That's coming up in the next couple of weeks. But, yeah, get a chance today, Cottage Hill Package, corner of Cottage Hill and Hillcrest, online at cottagehillpackage.com, or check them out at Cottage Hill Package on Facebook. And let me do this, too. I got to fire up some new intro music here for our buddy Brendan Kirby. That's pretty fantastic. Is that can't be the same Kirby daughter that was in here years ago? The tiny one that was, she was just a child.
She is still just a child. She's pint sized.
She's amazing.
She helped proofread my book. Wicked Mobile is still on sale, by the way.
Right.
And she writes her own songs. So she performed that at the Serta Brewery On Tuesday, they do a singer-songwriter open mic thing the first Tuesday of the month, and she performed it in front of live people.
Well, I am so impressed with the songwriting, her guitar playing, and just the confidence to sit in front of a bunch of people and play a song. Tell her I said, well done.
I will. She might even be listening, so...
Well, come on by. We'll do it live in the studio. All right. I mentioned this. Well, first of all, some breaking news here that you gave me a heads up that Ed Schultz has died.
Yes, I just saw that. Of course, a long time talk radio guy, a liberal radio host. He had a show on MSNBC for a while, and I literally don't know anything more than I just saw.
Yeah, 64.
He died at age 64, yes.
Oh, wow. Okay. And then I wanted to get to one more little story that you had told me that, well, I was slack-jawed when Mobile County Commissioner Jerry Carl told me about the Alabama memorabilia shop in Jerusalem. You said you and the missus were on your honeymoon in the Holy Land, and you saw the store as well.
Yeah. Now, I can't say for sure that it's the same store, but how many could there be, right?
Right, right.
The story is this. We were in Jerusalem, and we took the Mediterranean back when we were young and didn't have kids and had money. And we were walking through the Muslim quarter of the city, and it was some sort of holiday, so most of the stores were closed. But we're walking down this very narrow street, and I see this giant banner hanging up outside this store, Sweet Home Alabama. And I was like, holy cow, what is that? And we made sure to get a picture of it. And like I said, the store was closed, but I was very interested. Wanted to go in and talk to the guy and find out what the connection was, but it was closed. So, I never found out. I never got to the bottom of that one.
But now we have the rest of the story, all that. So that I am fascinated. If they're not sending a reporter over there to do a story to run at the beginning of football season, I think they're missing out. All right, during the news break, you and I also talked a little bit more about the Supreme Court decision and the president saying maybe he makes his decision today. We find out on Monday. But this discussion of Roe versus Wade, you were referencing something Jeffrey Toobin said.
Right, Jeffrey Toobin, and he's not the only one who has opined this, but Jeffrey Toobin is normally a pretty sober legal analyst for CNN. Immediately after Justice Kennedy said he was going to step down, said, well, this is it. Roe versus Wade is done. It will be overturned. 20 states will make abortion illegal outright, and we're going to go back to the dark ages. And I'm really taken aback by that, because I don't see that as a foregone conclusion at all. The way the court operates, they tread carefully when it comes to precedent, and they tread carefully, especially when it comes to really big, important precedent, like Roe versus Wade. Now, a lot of conservatives thought that that was a wrongly decided case, that they made up this right that didn't exist in the Constitution. But the longer something goes on, the more embedded it becomes and the more disruptive overturning it becomes. So it is possible that a new justice could form a 5-4 majority to overturn it. But Chief Justice John Roberts, anyone who has followed his career on the bench, is cautious. He likes to decide cases narrowly, that decide a particular case and a particular issue without setting sweeping precedents a lot. And he seems to operate with an idea of history and how the court is viewed. And everyone remembers that he surprised a lot of people by voting to uphold Obamacare, for instance.
Mm-hmm.
That was a 5-4 decision. The speculation of a lot of people is he just thought it would just be too big a thing and that the court would be viewed as political if it overturned it. So he bent over backwards to find a way to save the law. So, you know, given that, you know, I think it's very likely that he would say, overturning Roe cold turkey is going too far. I think it's possible the Supreme Court won't even take up an abortion case. Because remember, they only hear what they want to hear. So,
mm-hmm.
you know, they could just decide to let lower court rulings on that take effect. But if they did take an abortion case, I think the more likely outcome is that they would sort of chip away at Roe. They would allow more restrictions. But, you know, overturning it, I'm not so sure.
Hey, Brendan, can you hold on for just a couple minutes?
Yeah, absolutely.
Okay, all right. Come right back, because there's just one run out of time here before the bottom of the hour news break. But we'll come right back, because I want to get the latest on the situation on the border with Brendan. Of course, Brendan on Twitter. You can find him at Brendan K. Kirby. And we will be right back.
This is Midday Mobile with Sean Sullivan on FM Talk 106.5.
All right, 135 FM Talk 106.5, Midday Mobile on this Thursday, this Friday Eve. Continuing our conversation with Brendan Kirby from Lyset.com, YellowhammerNews.com, also the author of Wicked Mobile, a perfect beach read. If people want to get a copy of that, where, other than the end cap at Walgreens next to the hot fries, where do they get that?
Well, that, I've said this before, but I think you hit on the genius marketing scheme for this. They should go together. You just want to make sure that you maybe don't eat them together and read or just smudge the pages. But other than that, of course, you can go to Amazon. You can go to booksellers. You can go to local bookstores. Page and Palette in Fairhope has had it. I haven't been in there in a while to see if it's still on the shelves. But if it's not there, if you go into a bookstore, make sure you yell at them and say, where is Wicked Mobile? And then they'll order more. So that would be good.
There you go. All right. I want to mention this. I mentioned getting an update from you on what's going on the border. But while we were talking, the new border crossing numbers are out.
Yes, the border crossing numbers are out for June, and the Border Patrol apprehended 42,565 illegal immigrants in the month of June. So that was people who either actually tried to sneak into the country and they caught them near the border, or people who came to an official port of entry and were deemed inadmissible. So that's the number of those two together. And that is down slightly. It had been over 50,000 for the previous 3 months. So it's down a little bit. So, you can attribute that maybe to the zero tolerance policy that had been in effect before the brouhaha. Perhaps some people were responding to that, saying, hey, I don't want to risk getting arrested, especially if I'm traveling with my child. Of course, remember, if you'll recall, the National Guard went down there to assist Border Patrol, so that might have something to do with it as well. But it's down a little bit, but still significantly above what it was during Trump's first year in office. And these numbers are closely watched because they're viewed as a proxy for how many people are coming in. They figure, roughly speaking, for every one illegal immigrant caught by Border Patrol, one makes it through into the interior. So that's used as a gauge to see how many people are coming.
All right, so assumingly 42,000 did get through.
Right, yeah. I mean, and of course, there's no way to know that for sure, but that's just sort of the general ballpark estimate. If you go back to last year, there was just this huge steep drop that was happened almost immediately. In January, there were 42,463 people who were apprehended. And, of course, Donald Trump took the oath of office January 20th, so most of those numbers were under Obama. The very next month, in February, it dropped to 23,555 and then dropped two more months again and hit a low of only 15,766, which is just an unheard-of low number. And none of the policies actually had changed. We hadn't built a wall. We were not detaining more people. We hadn't instituted zero tolerance. The practices were the same. The same number of Border Patrol officers were on duty. Very clearly, that was the Trump effect. Trump campaigned on getting tough, and the message got down to Central America and Mexico, and people stopped coming for a time. And then, they figured out, and the smugglers figured out, that this was just all talk. That there wasn't any actual change on the ground, so they started coming back again. And now we're kind of at Obama-era numbers.
I want to talk about the what's next. You have a story up at LifeZet today that Trump faces calls to seek immigration detention alternatives. Because they didn't get anything done in Congress, and there was an executive action. What is the policy, and what are the changes what would be a detention alternative?
Right. Well, the policy had been, we're going to bring criminal charges against the parents. We're going to send them to jail. And then, of course, you know, when you send an adult to jail, their kids don't go to jail, too, because we don't do that in America. So they were put in these temporary facilities run by the Department of Health and Human Services. It sparked all kinds of outrage. So then Trump ended that a couple weeks ago, and he said, fine, what we're going to do is we're going to hold everyone together. And then they started searching for surplus military space to set up these temporary facilities, one of them in Baldwin County, I'm sure you talked about. Mm-hmm. That is going to be subject to court challenges because there was this consent decree that was signed off in the 1990s by the Clinton administration that judges have generally interpreted as meaning you can't hold children longer than 20 days. And other judges in the past have ruled family detention is no good either. So if that doesn't happen, if you can't, and you can, for a variety of reasons, you can't deport people faster than 20 days, particularly if they make an asylum claim, so you can't send them back, you've decided you don't want to separate them, and you can't hold them together, that leaves only one other option, which is to release them into the United States and hope that they show up for their court date. So we took a look at some of the options for detention. There was a family case management program that the department had run the Trump administration ended. A lot of Democrats are high on that and said it had a very high success rate in getting people to court. But the Trump administration determined it wasn't cost effective and that only a tiny number of those people actually had been deported, which suggests that maybe they were just cherry picking people who were most likely to win their asylum claims or most likely to win some other immigration benefit. And then there's another program that the Trump administration likes called Alternatives to Detention that looks a lot like how the feds handle just American prisoners that get charged in the federal system and released. They wear an ankle bracelet or they have to check in regularly on a telephone, and then there's a smartphone app called SmartLink that they've just started doing as well. That also has a high success rate at court attendance. The issue is it's pretty expensive. You know, you need to have people that are monitoring these things and running people down if they slip out of their electronic bracelet. And the question is, they've got 70,000 some people on this program now. Can you expand that to handle everyone coming through, you know, across the border with children if you don't want to detain them? And I think that's a question that is yet to be answered, whether there's the capacity and manpower to do that. But, you know, if you don't do that, then literally the only choice is we release people, we hope they show up to their immigration court hearings, and there's a high rate of people not showing up for those, which means they're loose effectively in the United States.
There he is, Brendan Kirby, LifeSet.com, YellowhammerNews.com. People want to find you on Twitter. Where are you hanging out?
Yeah, hit me up at Brendan K. Kirby.
All right, Brendan, we'll talk to you here in the next couple weeks. All right, 143 FM Talk 106.5. Coming right back, I want to talk one of my buddies in studio today. I'm talking about the T-shirt he brought me, which, by the way, this may be all the shirts I posted on Twitter last night. This may win all those, and it doesn't violate flag code. I want to talk about this. Plus, you know, if you want to stop the Zika virus, why don't you just take the same medicine you're giving to your dog for fleas? We'll give you details when we come back.
This is Midday Mobile with Sean Sullivan on FM Talk 106.5.
All right, 150 FM Talk 106.5. I got to say, I like it, but it's starting to get crowded here behind the control board with birthday gifts. By the way, Dalton got me a judge's gavel. My buddy Ben got me the coolest T-shirt I've seen in the longest time. Put a picture of that up on Twitter in just a second. I've got some temptation in here in the form of Reese's Peanut Butter Cups. So I'm gonna have to lock those in some kind of container or keep those away from me. But thank you. And I wanted to give you a heads up as well. Talked to Justin Thompson just earlier today, actually. He and I were talking. He's one of the JCs with the Alabama Deep Sea Fishing Rodeo, the 85th annual this year. And there's some stuff I want to point out. They got more music. I've been joking with the JCs. It's like they have, okay, they claim to fame, the world, the planet, the globe's largest multi-day fishing tournament. In addition, it looks like they're trying to put on a music festival of note as well. They've been building this year after year with all the different bands. This year, no different. So even if you're not fishing the Alabama Deep Sea Fishing Rodeo, there's entertainment the whole way through the Mossy Oak Liars contest on Thursday night through Sunday and the cannon shot. But I told them, y'all have just really got a winner on your hands here. They are adding a new jackpot this year to the Alabama Deep Sea Fishing Rodeo. And now the fourth jackpot in the mix. You have the speckled trout, as always, the big game, the king mackerel, right? And now you have their Crane Works Red Snapper jackpot. And so I was talking to Justin about this earlier today. Here's the deal. It's based on 100 boats, which I have no worry. They're going to get 100 boats in this just among my friends. And it's a boat ticket for the jackpot, all right? So the $150 ticket for the boat, so you split it amongst, everybody's going to have their regular rodeo tickets, but then you split the price, if you want to, of the jackpot ticket between everybody fishing on the boat. Top prize, just based on 100 boats, $6,000, and they're going to pay 10 places. 10 get paid, top at least $6,000 in this. This is, why we weren't doing this before, this is awesome. Awards package with cash and prizes combined, $500,000 in this year's rodeo. And how about that Red Snapper jackpot, part of the mix? Those tickets can be bought online at adsfr.com for the jackpot ticket for Red Snapper jackpot. Your other tickets, well, the lineup of ticket locations on their website at adsfr.com. And heck, by Saturday, we're just a week out from the Roy Barton Young Anglers Tournament, the kids tournament, which is something my daughter and I were planning on over the weekend. We're talking about kind of strategies going forward to next weekend. So Roy Barton coming up a week from Saturday, and then 2 weeks from Saturday, the 85th Alabama Deep Sea Fishing Rodeo. Did it strike you like it did me? You said, wow, where did the summer go? We've already moved on to rodeo time. It is here. Make sure you get your tickets. And, yeah, check out that Red Snapper jackpot. I think that is just really going to be popular. All right. I mentioned the flea story. Well, it's a Zika story and a flea story. So I want everybody here right now to get – I'm going to come around behind you, and I'm going to pour some stuff in between your shoulder blades so you can't turn around and gnaw on it and get in – you know what I'm talking about when you put the flea stuff on your pets? You know, you go right there between the shoulder blades, and you're trying to make sure it gets into the skin before where the dog can't turn around and lick whatever the stuff is. Okay, here's the story. Here's the health story. CNN Health is reporting. Taking the same well-known flea drugs commonly given to dogs and cats could protect humans against mosquitoes carrying malaria, Zika, and other diseases, a new study suggests. I guess it's going to be like you and your spouse saying, honey, this is a special relationship, and I think it's time I apply your flea medicine. They also could protect us from sand flies bearing the tropical disease leishmaniasis, I think it is. The class of drugs called isozolines is given to less than a third of the populations in areas prone to outbreak in insect-borne diseases, could prevent 97% of all cases of infection, according to research published this week by the National Academy of Sciences. Okay, so isozolines are, and I'm sure there's a vet friend of mine out there can correct me on the text line if I'm wrong, they are contained in veterinary products like Bravecto and NexGard, which protect pets from fleas and ticks. An animal's bloodstream absorbs the medicine, which are given orally and then spread throughout the body. These drugs, which remain active for up to 3 months, kill blood-sucking fleas and ticks. In humans, a single dose of the medicine might also act as an insecticide effective against mosquitoes and sandflies for between 50 and 90 days, says a collaborating scientist. Okay, so let me go through what they said here. Let me sum it up. Basically, the idea is it wouldn't infect you from getting, so the mosquito that's got Zika or malaria or whatever, it's cruising around, doing its mosquitoing around. It shows up, it bites you. You will get infected, even if you have this pet flea medicine in your system. You would get infected, but because that flea or the mosquito would ingest the stuff that's now in your bloodstream, it would die within a short period of time, therefore not be able to go on and infect the next person. So wave after wave, short life of mosquitoes, right? Short birth to death cycle of these. More of these mosquitoes come in contact with more people with this, the flea collar on, the intravenous flea collar, and then they die. And they're saying if they use it, listen to the stats, though. This is pretty heady stuff. In like the hot zones for Zika, somewhere like that, they said they could prevent up to 97% of all cases of infection. And if you start thinking about that, you take those diseases that spread so quickly in populations, and now you have only 3% of the population. Those folks can be isolated, kept away from other people, and not have that, you know, prevalence. And then think about year after year, fewer number of people, fewer chances for reinfection out there. So this is pretty interesting. Now, I don't know that I'm ready to put on the flea collar or take the medicine, but they said this is a thing. And they also talked about, you know, would it be done here stateside? You know, because we had areas like the area down in Miami that did have some person-to-person inside the United States transmission of Zika. Would they give it in isolated areas to make sure that the disease didn't spread? I don't know. The Aedes aegypti mosquitoes, those are the ones that we talked to the folks from the Mobile County Health Department before who said they were present here in Mobile, and those mosquitoes are the ones that could, not saying these are carrying Zika, but they could carry Zika. So there it is. I'll put the story up on Twitter, but yeah, so I don't know if I'm going to have it between my shoulder blades or I'm going to wear the flea collar or whatever it is, but they're saying that possibly our pets' flea medicine is going to be the solution to combat things like Zika and malaria and all those things. All right, going to wrap it up here. Feinbaum on the way in shortly. Want to say congratulations to Kathy Smith. Kathy was our weekly winner in the Summer Better Than Others prize giveaway. She won from Goldfingers on Dolphin Street. Now, there were two boxes last week, one at Goldfingers on Dolphin Street, one at Goldfingers in Saraland. She won at the Dolphin Street location. Kathy, congratulations. You get a $50 gift certificate from Goldfingers, and now you're in the running for the grand prize, over $5,500 worth of gear and prizes in the Summer Better Than Others prize giveaway. Now, we got a couple more weeks of this. Your chance now to go to Mike Ward's Liberty Saves once per day, drop your name in the registration box, and we'll do the same thing like we did for Kathy, drawing from Goldfingers. We're going to draw this time next week from the names entered in at Mike Ward's Liberty Safe, and that puts you, of course, in for the $50 gift certificate and in the running for the grand prize, which is a combination of items from our friends at the Cart Doctor, also Mike Ward's Liberty Safes, Gray Gulf Charters, my buddy Captain Charlie Gray, also from the folks at the Carrot Patch. You got the Old Time Feed in the mix, Goldfingers in the mix, all this together for the grand prize. But you got a chance to win weekly, and this week is your chance to win at Mike Ward's Liberty Safe. So go by and see them. They're on Moffitt at I-65, and drop your name in once a day, please. I don't want to have to come back and say, yeah, you know, take some of yours out. So once a day, drop your name in, and hopefully we'll be drawing your name at this time next week. All right, big thank you to my buddy Ben for stopping in, and I'll put this picture up here in just a second on Twitter and show you what the shirt looks like. It is the coolest shirt I ever, I think, in my lifetime received, and at the same time, I want to say happy birthday to you, man. Happy birthday. Yours is coming up in 2 days, and you're only just a couple years younger than me. Okay. That's what I keep telling myself. Keep working it that way. All right. Paul Feinbaum Show on the way next.